Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hi, I'm Zoe, Area Sales Manager for Practice Plan. Welcome to this week's podcast. Today we have Michael Bentley again, who's going to do his second part instalment on building a strong team. This week he's going to be discussing the most important topic that can be in a practice, which is interviewing.
So let's talk about the ultimate interview process. I want to make sure that you'll get the very best out of that candidate. You want to learn about that person. You want to be excited and you want to be filled with confidence that the job that you've got in the practice, that person can do, standing on their head, or at least that they're the right person, and with training, they are going to be able to be that wow factor, that passionate person. So you've got lots to do here. So I'm not just talking about nurses, I'm talking about all different roles in practice, including the dentist, including practice managers, including the front desk team, therapists, clinical dental technicians. This interview process will work for all. So let's have a look at that in more detail. First of all, I would definitely explore the CV and the application. So that means you do need to read it before they come in, and you need to be confident that you can just pop in a couple of questions on a walk around the practice. You'll start to realise that people have been making things up on their CV. So I'd recommend that you go further back than their last job, just to find out whether or not they have lied about something, about some experience, or they've made a real embellishment on something. So you might want to look at a previous employment that they've worked at and look at their website and see whether or not there is a question that you can throw in that might make somebody unconfident. If somebody can answer those questions well on an informal walk around, then you know you've got somebody that hopefully has told the truth on their CV. I would definitely explore their qualifications as well. People are forging qualifications, so make sure that you actually, for every qualification somebody says they've got, you have that certificate in front of you and you photocopy it. Otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, you don't have the qualification. Now then, practice walks are optional, but I recommend that you do, because again, it allows somebody to understand your practice, the environment, and what your offer is to patients. And you want the applicant to be excited to be there, and you want them to be encouraging about, this is looks like a fantastic practice, this looks really nice, commenting about things that are actually inside the practice. Again, it's informal, but it starts to build some confidence with the person that you're going to employ. If you sit somebody down and you just ask them 10 questions straight away, you won't get the best out of them, I promise you. The next part I'm going to talk about is the medical history, and this can be a little bit contentious, but I'm known for being contentious and I've worked in practice for the last 16 years, so forgive me. I very much recommend that you do a medical history form on every person that you are doing a job interview for. And it's really important because people tend to lie about their medical histories. So do a medical history straight away. I have been popped into traps where I've actually offered a job to somebody. They've started, they've done 2 weeks in, and guess what? They're suddenly pregnant. 6 months pregnant, which was one of my candidates. And we had lots of problems through their probation period. Had I done a medical history form straight away, I would have known that they are pregnant. That doesn't mean to say I'm not going to employ them, but you need to be informed of all the information, and medical problems are information that you need to know about. When you take somebody on and you do a contract, you'll ask them to do a medical history form anyway. It's just bringing it further forward. And also, if you are interviewing somebody and something happens to them in front of you, why shouldn't you know their medical history? We do for patients. So it's one way that introducing it, just say, you're going to be in the practice for about an hour to an hour and a half, so I've got a medical history form here for you to fill out. If you fill this out, if something happens to you, then I'm in a position to help you. So if they are pregnant and they do faint in the practice, at least you'll know. So it's useful information either way. I'll leave that with you. Yes, for everybody, you're going to have to do a clinical interview. That's really important. Have good, clear clinical interview questions and make them obvious. You know, not something that's going to make them do a 10 to 15 minute answer, but something that they should know and they should be able to verbalise very quickly. what does cross-infection stand for? Could be a good nurse question. You know, just something that you know they should be able to find an answer to quickly. You also need situational questions for clinicians. That's really important. You know, you need to put, you know, case studies in front of them to find out how they're holistically going to treatment plan, what their patient thoughts are, how they're going to do a customer service and clinical balance. And that's really important. You know, you want to manage the customer service requirement alongside the clinical skills. The clinical skills for me are a bit of a given, really. You're looking for somebody that is passionate about their job and wants to explain things to patients really well. And that's what I'm looking for from the situational questions. I'm not looking for a 10-minute clinical answer. I want, what are you going to say to a patient? How are you going to make them understand where they're going with their treatment? So that side of things is really important. Customer service is something that everybody talks about. We provide the best customer service in our practice. We do this, we do that. And yes, customer service is really important. So every person that you interview has to go through a very strong customer service interview. How would you welcome a patient? How would you say goodbye to a patient? These are little questions, but they make all the difference. We know that when we're working with patients, it's the little things that make the difference. You know, the filling part of a treatment, yep, it has to be done correctly. It has to last, doesn't it? You might put a guarantee on that treatment, for an example, but it's the customer service around that appointment that's going to allow the patient to go out and go, do you know what? They're a fantastic dentist. They're a fantastic therapist. You know, isn't the front desk team lovely? Isn't the nurse that worked with me today fantastic? If you haven't got customer service strong questions in your interview, you're not going to be able to get that out. And then you're hoping that somehow they're going to walk into your practice and they're going to give you that. I'm telling you now that people that are very unresponsive in interviews, very quiet, are not going to give you that showbiz, passionate dentistry that your practice may need. And patients feed off people, so communication is the absolute key. If it's not delivered in an interview, I'm afraid it's a no from me. Now then, something else that I think is really important is testing computer skills. The computer is so important in dental practices and you do need to test. And the way to test this easily is to give your candidate a set of notes to do. And you literally read the set of notes and they type it there and then in front of you. It tests lots of things. Their typing skills, their ability to listen to what actually they're being given from the clinical example that you have. And it also allows you to find out whether they can do punctuation, whether they can spell dental terms. The more experience somebody has, the more you would expect them to spell things like erythema. You know, you would expect somebody to be able to do that, especially nurses. So if they can't, it means how much they've been exposed to spellings in practice. What do they actually know? So definitely you need to be doing computer skills. And I'll do that with all of the clinicians. That's really important. For front desk staff workers, how can you do that? Well, I would definitely get them to book in a new patient, maybe book in a set of recall appointments. So at least you're testing whether or not they can double click, you know, pop it into the appointment diary. They can put in key information. It's just testing things that you know they're going to have to do when they walk through the door. The next side of things is practical skills tests. And let's face it, one of the things for nurses is it is a very practical application. So things like testing hand washing, things like, you know, mixing alginate, popping on the appropriate PPE, maybe doing decontamination of instruments are all things that you can practically test that will allow you to understand whether or not a candidate is really working in a surgery setting and has that confidence to do so. So practical skills are just as important. How can you test those with clinicians? Then I would do a half day with those people. And if you do a half day with them, you can get to understand their clinical ability alongside their customer service as well. Yes, of course, when you're doing clinicians, they should bring alongside them a clinical portfolio and it should reflect their work and it should be the best work that they can possibly do. And that's what you want to see. If you're the practice manager that's doing the interviews, and I highly recommend that it is, then of course, the dentists are the people that can obviously review those clinical portfolios and decide whether those really work for them. And of course, I said right at the start that you do need to review the certificate of qualifications, make sure that they are real. And of course, I like to look at the CPD logs, you know, see what training people have had after they've qualified, because that tells me whether or not they're looking at courses that are relevant, they're exciting, and they're still passionate about the field that they're in, and they want to start moving their experience forward. And of course, lastly, you do need a question and answer session with that candidate. And that's really important too, that they've got some questions with them, so it looks like they're interested. You may have answered many of their questions through the interview experience, but there should be an allowance to do that right at the end. So that's quite a lot of detail, isn't it? But it is the ultimate interview process. And as I said earlier, it's going to take at least an hour to an hour and a half to do that interview process. Some practices do split that up, and they do interview one and interview two. You can do that, but you know, I would do that for the clinicians and for maybe practice managers. Your support workers should be able to have one interview process. So let's come on to the next part of the system, which is a trial day. And I do recommend that you do trial days for everybody that comes into the practice. What do the trial days really are for? They're for your team. Do the team like the person that could be employed to work alongside them? Are the skills that you've seen in the interview the skills that somebody actually has, you know, in front of them? Yes, they're going to be nervous. Yes, they might make some mistakes, but at least the nurses can have an understanding whether or not they can work alongside this person. Nurses are also very good at actually working with clinicians and giving you an idea of what that clinician is like in real life. And if they've worked with a lot of your top dentists, top hygienists, top therapists in your practice, they can give you a really good set of feedback about the clinician that they've worked with for half a day. So that's really worthwhile. Definitely do your trial days. If you're bringing a dentist on board in your practice, then definitely a business owner meeting is absolutely vital. And I recommend that they meet the candidate for at least, you know, a couple of hours to see whether they gel. Remember, the business owners are going to have to do lots of clinical peer review meetings, and they're going to have to work with that person, you know, ongoing. So therapists, dentists, clinical dental technicians, hygienists, I'd highly recommend that they have this meeting. So therefore, you know, that relationship is there right from the get-go. Remember, peer review is the only way to move these people forward. So the business owner thinks, I don't like them, they don't meet what I want, then you're going to have to, you know, take them off that short list. Of course, ultimately, you want to get them to the job offer. And that is, when you do that, you've got the absolute right candidate. If you think about everything that I've said over the last 10 minutes, that's a really big process for somebody to go on, from the CV, to the application, to the interview, to a trial day, to a business owner meeting. There's so many steps that they have to go through. But when you make that job offer, make sure that it's somebody that you really, really want. If it isn't, I'm sorry, but start again. If you knee jerk into, I need a dentist, I need a nurse, what's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is you'll get down 3 months or 4 months down the line, and you'll go in their probationary period, they're not right for the practice, they're not right for the team, and you're going to have to start again, which is going to waste all that time, all that investment that you've already made. So get it right from the start. And if you want somebody, make sure that you really do want them. And the job offer should be an exciting experience for everyone. So, when you've made a job offer on the telephone, you know, or you've let them know by email, then you're going to have a contract meeting. And this needs to happen before that member of staff, you know, starts. Because the contract you do need to go through, and you need to make sure your contract is right for your business. There will be negotiations the higher up the person is. So if it's a dentist, they are going to be meticulous, and they're going to go through every single point with you and through their contracts. Nurses tend to have a bit of an overview of what's going on, and they'll be much quicker to sign. But you need contract meetings to make sure that everything's ironed out before they start work, and that's really important. You will have people that will have a contract meeting and end up not taking the job offer, and that is going to happen, you know. So make sure that you've got people in reserve that you can make another job offer to. So don't turn down any candidates until you've had that contract meeting and you've had that shake of hands that everything is moving forward, because if something happens in the contract meeting, you're going to need your backups. So make sure that you've got your backups before you've actually finalised who's coming in. And finally, you do need to think about people under probation. This is a review period, and most practices only have a review period of 3 months. I recommend it's got to be at least 6 months as a minimum, because 6 months allows you to really understand, is this person the right person for the business? Are they doing everything that was part of your vision plan for them right when you started the vacancy? And if they tick all those boxes, then of course you're going to do a permanent employee position. If they don't, in probationary, you can get rid of people far quicker. So you need to think about when you're offering a permanent employee contract at the end of somebody's probation, have they ticked all the boxes from your vision plan? Because if they haven't, then they shouldn't be permanently employed. You can go back to probationary. You can extend probationary if you want to. So 6 months is your absolute minimum, but you can extend if you want to. And don't forget that if you're unsure and you want 3 more months to decide, then extend the probationary period. And then you should be skipping around the practice. I can't do that right now, but I would normally. You know, you can skip round once somebody's permanently employed. And I think that's a big thing for somebody to say, well done, you've passed your probationary period, and here is your permanent contract. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Michael Bentley, and I'll speak to you soon.